says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey, 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 oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. Creatures say, take good care of us. Please do not hurt us. Hey, 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 oh. Hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be, and we are here to take care of ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care. Nahastan aniva nijone go shabothya, nijone go shabothya. Hey, 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 oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, 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 oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh.
Greetings. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat-Kitishi Native American Center. We are broadcasting on RFPI, Radio for Peace International, Global Community Radio. Akwe, welcome. This is your host, Ones Pritzker. Wolf Mountain Radio focuses on protecting Mother Earth, defending Native lands and Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices presents the situations facing Native peoples throughout the world with Native news, interviews, music, commentaries, and investigative reports. This program serves to protect sacred Mother Earth and the traditional cultural lifeways of Indigenous peoples throughout the world. Please listen now to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. Ho, Kanawantakwasin, to all of our relations.
Hey!
Music from the Eastern Eagle Singers off their ABBA record CD, Sacred Flight. The name of that Mi'kmaq song was The Drum. As most listeners to Wolf Mountain Radio know, the Native American drum is considered the heartbeat of our tribal nations. We honor our drummers, whose songs honor Mother Earth and our traditional cultural lifeways. Ashkwe, greetings and hello, everyone. Welcome to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. In today's program, we focus on the situation in Lebanon, as well as issues of concern in the Islamic world. My guest today is Mr. Fahou Jaber. The subject of what's now called Middle East affairs is a very complex topic. This part of the world has a long cultural history, not to mention political, economic, social, religious, military, and environmental issues of importance. I do not profess to have a deep knowledge or understanding of either the historical or contemporary situations of the region. However, as someone interested in international affairs and concerned for peace, human rights, social, economic, and environmental justice, I consider it very important to try and learn about these issues and stay informed about events in this part of the world. I hope today's conversation with Mr. Fahou Jaber contributes to better understanding of what is happening in Lebanon. This is in keeping with Yad Kiddushi Native Center's mission statement, which in part reads, quote, Yad Kiddushi Native Center serves to inform, educate, and enlighten people about important issues facing the well-being of all life on our planet, unquote. We here at Yad Kiddushi Native Center may not agree with some of the views expressed by today's guest. We do, however, consider it very important to listen with an open mind to the comments of Mr. Jaber. I would like to now welcome Mr. Fahou Jaber to the program. Welcome, sir.
Thank you, Onas. My name is Fouad Jaber. I am a Lebanese citizen, and I'm currently a resident of the United States. I have lived in Lebanon until I was 25, when I came to the United States to do my PhD in hydrology. And I'm currently residing in Southwest Florida, where I work as a research scientist.
My friend, as most listeners to Wolf Mountain Native Radio know, I always like to have people hear what is the correct name of their person's homeland and to hear a little bit about the geography and even ecology of the area, because there are a lot of misstereotypes, especially about Lebanon and Lebanese people. Would you please share your perspective about the geography and culture of Lebanon?
As it's known in Arabic or Lebanese, Lebanon is a very small country. It's nearly the size of Rhode Island on the eastern side of the Mediterranean. It's a country of approximately 3.5 million people to 4 million. There aren't clear census numbers. It's a mountain country. It's, in fact, the name Lebanon, Lebanon, comes from the name of the mountain, which is the Mount Lebanon. And mountains run from the north to the south of the country. So all along the country, there's a very small coastal area in the west of the country where most of the big cities are located. And then there's a small plateau where most of the agriculture happened after the mountainous zone. Lebanon's history, Lebanon is known throughout the world as being the homeland of the Phoenicians, which are supposedly the first people who created alphabet, some of the first sailors of the world, and as a result, the first traders around the Mediterranean, definitely, but also some people say farther along the coast of Africa. The country became Arab or Arabic after the emergence of the Islamic religion and eventually the Islamic conquest of most of the Arab world. Arab, by definition, an Arabic country, by definition, is a country that speaks the Arabic language. There is no identified ethnic group as Arabs. And since the country speaks Arabic, we are an Arabic country. Of Lebanon identifies itself mostly, and there's like with the surrounding area that is mostly known in geography as the Fertile Crescent. That area is currently divided into Lebanon, Palestine, Jordan, Syria, and some parts of Iraq. the culture of this area in general is close to each other, and even the dialect spoken is very close, with difference in accents. After the different Islamic dynasties that have come, eventually the Ottomans were the rulers of most of the Islamic world and the Arab world. The Ottoman leader at the time, or Ottoman Sultan at the time, wanted to divide it at some parts. Sometimes the south of Lebanon was part of a greater area that had its headquarters in Acre in Palestine currently. Sometimes it was joined to Beirut. Sometimes Beirut was joined to Damascus. So there was a lot of interaction, and Lebanon proper was not clearly defined, except for the fact that the Lebanese mountain had a very clear culture, since they were higher than everyone else and were harder to control, like the coastal areas. After World War I, Ottoman rule was in the area, and there's a lot of reports about Ottoman cruelty, and there's a lot of historical accounts of how the Ottomans were tyrants in the area and prevented the people in the area to have their own culture and self-decision. Even they had problems with the Arabic language, and you know, we can have a whole program about the Ottoman rule. After World War I and the defeat of the Ottoman Empire at the hands of the Allies at the time, Lebanon, the whole Fertile Crescent area, which identified itself sometimes as larger Syria, was divided between the French and the British in an agreement called the Sykes-Picot Agreement, in which it was decided to give Syria and Lebanon to the French, under French rule, and Palestine and Jordan to be given to the British and be under British rule. And this was in direct conflict with promises they had given the Arab leaders in Saudi Arabia now, that were promised to be allowed to achieve their dream of one Arab country that would include Syria, Lebanon, and all the greater Syria area.
Fahoud, listening to your remarks about the cultural history of your homeland, it sounded very similar to the colonial history of the United States and Canada towards my indigenous peoples of what's now called North America. The demarcation of Lebanon by Great Britain and France by the Sykes-Picot Agreement seems similar to the creation of the U.S.-Canadian border that had no regard for the traditional cultural geography or native spirituality that is based on sacred homeland. Before we continue our discussion on current Arab-Israeli issues and the war some people call conflict, would you please talk about the historical relationship between Arab and Jewish people, and how for many, many years prior to the European Jews' immigration into the Middle East, the Middle East society, Arab society, was really different villages of peoples of different faiths that have lived together maybe even for millennia. Would you talk about the Jewish-Arab world prior to the World War II change?
Technically, when Islam came, it declared that Christians and Jews are people of the book, they call them, which means that their God is the same God. You know, the God came and announced Judaism on people, and people became Jews, and then the same God improved a little bit his what people should follow, and Christianity came, and then Islam is just the third in a row. It's like the third part of that same religion. So Jews and Christians were seen as people of the book, and they were allowed to stay and live with and practice their own religion within the Islamic nation. So this is in when Muhammad came, and that was the... So as a result, the Jews, which many of them lived in the Arab world all over, from the Gulf, which is now Saudi Arabia, all the way to Morocco, which is in Western Africa. Let's jump fast to the 19th and 20th century. The Jewish people who lived there were just Arabs like the other of another religion. So like in Lebanon, there were Arab Christians, Arab Muslims, and there were Arab Jews. The biggest number of Arab Jews lived in Iraq and in Morocco, and some of them lived in Syria. Up till 1948, there was no problem or any documented problem that I know of between these communities. They all lived, many people had friends from Jews and Muslim societies, and the problem started in 1948 when the Zionist Jews of Europe came with the intent of making Palestine Israel, and it should be the land of the Jews. If you're not Jewish, you can live there maybe, but you will not have full rights.
Fahud, early in our conversation, you summarized the history of conflict between Arab states and Israel, the 1948, 1956, 1967, 1973 wars, and what some might term low-intensity military action prior to the current 2006 battle in Lebanon between Hezbollah and Israel. I know you and I hope for peace. Fahud, do you believe Israel has a right to exist?
I believe regarding this that the Europeans, the European Jews who have come to the land of Palestine have been there for 50 years now. Many of them were born there and they live there. But the way the state of Israel is now as a state, a Jewish state, a state for Jewish people, a state that prefers Jews over others, is, I think, not a viable option in the Middle East now. Israel has to become a secular state open to all the people who live in this land, people, and we should not forget the refugees, people that lived there and had to flee in 1948 and in 1967 have the right to return. It's an international right in all conventions, and there's a United Nations resolution for that matter. So the state of Israel can live as long as, and should exist, as long as it accommodates all the population of the land and allow for all the refugees to return. And if they want to, those refugees have been for 50 years in other places, but they have to be compensated for the 50 years of pain and suffering that they have suffered in case they don't want to return.
Fahud, would you please clarify the status of Arabs who live in Israel? It's my understanding that there are many Israeli Arabs, as well as Palestinians, who either reside or commute into Israel for work.
Just to clarify how Arabs and Palestinians, what are the groups of Arabs and Palestinians living in Israel, there's two large different groups of Palestinians in the historical land of Palestine, which has become Israel and the Palestinian territories now. There's the Palestinians that lived originally in the West Bank and Gaza, and in addition to those, the people who fled what is now Israel in 1948 and moved to the West Bank and Gaza. And these are Palestinians that are currently under occupation in the West Bank and under siege in Gaza. Then there's another large group of Palestinians who did not leave their land during the attacks of the Haganah and the Israeli Arab War of 48, and they stayed in their villages, and eventually Israel decided to give them Israeli citizenship, but it doesn't come with the full rights of the Israeli Jewish population. Some examples that I can mention, the Arab Israelis, some of the problems they face is, one example is that in Israel, military service is obligatory, and as a result, it's somehow similar to the registration here in the U.S. If you're not registered, you're not eligible to loans, you're not eligible to many government jobs, you cannot run for elections and different things like that. The Palestinian Israelis are not allowed to join the army, so they're already excluded from all these loans, these jobs, and different privileges that come with having served in the army. So this is from the beginning. But in addition, there's a lot of systematic or institutional discrimination against these people that is not necessarily in the law. One example is that building permits, it's a big one. Building permits, just to build a new house for an Arab Israeli, for a Palestinian Israeli, could take up to 10 to 15 years. And they will only give you permits in case you have good connections or you pay a lot of money. I'm going to mention a good book that describes the conditions of many of these Israeli Palestinians, which, by the way, the media calls Israeli Arabs to separate from Palestinians, but they are Palestinians who have Israeli citizenship. One of the good books are a book by an Orthodox bishop called Elias Shakur, and it's called Blood Brothers. It's a book that describes his own problems in trying to build a school in his own village in Israel, and he is an Israeli citizen. So this one is an example. Another example is that if any of the Palestinian Israelis decides to marry a Palestinian that lives in the West Bank that doesn't have Israeli citizenship, it could take years to be able to bring his wife to Israel proper for her to live with him and become an Israeli citizen like him. Sometimes it doesn't happen. So it's very strongly discouraged by the Israeli government.
بكرة البعد أكيد إنتو
from Lebanese singer Farouz off her EMI Music CD, Oriental Flower. The name of the song is Agniyat Al-Wada. You are listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. My guest today is Lebanese scholar Dr. Fahoud Jaber. Fahoud, your response to my previous question on the issue of Arabs living in Israel brings up the topic of Palestinians working in Israel. Recently, I watched a documentary focusing on the difficulties of border crossing for Arab workers entering into Israel. What comments do you have on this subject?
Due to the conditions, you know, practically made up by Israel, the poverty of the West Bank and Gaza, which is a result of the full control and the occupation of these areas since 1967, the economy in both the West Bank and Gaza is in shambles and has been in shambles for a long time. And one of the main sources of living for many of these Palestinians is going to Israel as laborers. But those people go through hours of searches. It's very difficult. There's every time there's like something small, like one gunshot in one village, all the border is closed and these people are not allowed, these people who are paid by the day, are not allowed to go to their work for months at the time. And lately there has been a clear change in this, where Israel has been encouraging laborers to come from Africa, poorest country, in order to completely reduce the number of Palestinians that cross and get cheap labor from other countries.
Would you please talk about the Lebanese relationship to other Arab states, your neighbors in the region?
There was a strong effort from the French to develop and culture a feeling among Lebanese of Lebanese nationality and Lebanese identity rather than the Arab identity that was prevailing before and during the Ottoman rule. And this partly resulted in a small different culture. Lebanon has always been westernized since 1943 until now, or mostly until 1975. It was very strongly westernized, and it had a different feeling than what you would know when you go to more less touristic, less common, like if somebody goes to Saudi Arabia and goes to Lebanon in 1975 at the height of the nightlife in Lebanon and Beirut, you would never say that those two countries belong to the same culture. You know, what you see in a flash, you know, in the streets of Beirut is not necessarily what represents the culture of the country. The country is Arab and remained Arab in culture, remained until now. And you can see that in our language, in our dances, in the type of food. But mostly you can see it in the solidarity of the Arab people, the regular Arab people. I'm not talking about what the government do. And of the Arab people, of the Lebanese, with the Palestinian struggle, with the Syrian, during the civil war in Lebanon, which was from 75 to 1990, the regular Arab person was very concerned. The inaction of the government is a different story, but the people identify with each other and associate with each other. Lebanon currently have passed through different periods. Really, there's a small change in the history of Lebanon since 1975 that resulted in a change of its relationship with mostly Syria, but also with other Arab countries at a point. What happened is, as we had said before, the PLO had established itself in southern Lebanon. This eventually resulted in tipping the sectarian balance in the country, and Christian forces, Christian leadership, not necessarily the people at the first, but eventually armed themselves and decided to try to tip the balance back in their favor as compared to the increasing in number Muslim population due to the inflow of Palestinian, and because of their fear of the Palestinian having a state within a state. A civil war broke out in 1975, in April 1975. A civil war started, which started between Christian right-wing groups, more like right-wing ideology, against Muslim and leftist groups, which had a lot of Christian among them at the time. And there was a street fights in Beirut, and Beirut divided into two: West Beirut, which was with the leftists and the Christians, and East Beirut, which was with the right-wing Christian militias. And this war became pretty bad, and at some point Syria intervened to stop the war, and in its intervention sent its army into Lebanon. And they changed sides, in fact, at the beginning. At the beginning they sided with the Christians, the Christian right wing, the Christian militias, because they were concerned that the stronger leftist / Muslim / Palestinian were going to run them over, and then Syria would have a leftist country that she cannot control on its border. But then eventually when they found out that the Christian right-wing militias ideology does not coincide with theirs. In fact, the Christian right-wing ideology coincides at that point more with the Israeli point of view. They shifted side and joined the Palestinians, and that's in the first 2 years of the war. And then from 77, which by the time the Syrians shifted the positions, until 82, there was just a bad war between the two sides, which went on. You know, it looks like it's indefinitely. You know, I was 5 years old in 75 when it started. From 75 to 82, it looked like a war. People bombed the other side with no attempt to change the status quo whatsoever. In 82, that was the year of new presidential elections. And the head of the Christian militia, who's a Maronite, and as you remember, the president of Lebanon should be a Maronite, wanted to be the next president of Lebanon. But given the state of affairs and the war going on, he was guaranteed that 50% of the country / parliament was not going to vote for him. At the same time, the Israelis were not very happy with the Palestinian Liberation Organization in South Lebanon, and they thought that they could do something to solve that problem once and for all. Invading Lebanon, which would destroy the Palestinian Liberation Organization, and get there and force the election of their ally, Bashir Ismail, which was the head of the Christian Falangist militias at the time. In answer to your question about Lebanon's relation with the other Arab countries, let me just say there is an Arab League, which is an organization that represents all Arab countries. It has been, since its creation until now, mostly ineffectual. Arab countries have different interests there. Despite having a common culture, the different countries that are, in most cases, not very democratic are ruled by people that are driven by their own interests, like oil in the Gulf countries, in the African countries, some have more African interests than Arab. And so it's hard to see these whole countries as an entity, except when they meet once every few years in the Arab League meetings. Lebanon's history with its neighbors, Arab, it's always been the place where they go visit as tourists, but they never were interested too much in its politics. And when there was a civil war from 1975 to 1990, there was very little Arab interference, except for Syria, which is the closest neighbor and is always concerned of any political upheaval in Lebanon. And during the civil war from 75 to 1990, Syria interfered, and mostly in 1982, Israel interfered and invaded Lebanon in an invasion that lasted, the attack itself lasted 6 months, resulting in 20,000 Lebanese civilians killed, and culminated in a massacre of women and children in Sabra and Shatila, which were refugee camps, Palestinian refugee camps in Beirut. Eventually, the Israelis, a few years, withdrew and left. Also, a result of that invasion was that the PLO, the Palestinian Liberation Organization led by Yasser Arafat, left Lebanon in boats and established itself in Tunisia. And they had to leave. Lebanon had no Palestinian military organization, mostly, and after that invasion. But the Israelis, when they withdrew, they kept a small area in South Lebanon, approximately 10 kilometers from their border, occupied in order to make sure that if anything happens in Lebanon, if anyone wants to attack Israelis, they will attack them in Lebanon rather in northern Israel. So, but that occupation, as any occupation in the world, resulted in lots of resentment from people who didn't necessarily resent this much Israelis. They didn't like them, but being occupied by them was the catalyst for the creation of radical groups such as the Hezbollah, which was born of the Israeli invasion and started a war to drive the Israelis out by guerrilla attacks on Israeli troops in South Lebanon that resulted in the Israelis withdrawing from Lebanon in 2000.
Listening to Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices, a production of the Yat Kedichi Native Center. Yat Kedichi Native Center defends Mother Earth and the cultural lifeways of indigenous peoples throughout the world. Yat Kedichi Native Center is an intertribal, culture and arts, environmental protection, social justice, and news media organization. Yat Kedichi Native Center portrays Native peoples and their world views in a more accurate and in-depth depiction of both our ancestral and contemporary cultures. Yat Kedichi Native Center serves to educate by providing a deeper understanding of our diverse cultures, arts, values, histories, and contemporary situations. Yat Kedichi tries to honor traditional ways by instilling an appreciation and respect for Mother Earth and tribal peoples throughout the world. Yat Kedichi Native Center educates the public on important issues facing indigenous communities. We work in support of intertribal, cultural, environmental, and social justice issues by networking with other organizations and events which share our concerns. Yat Kedichi Native Center serves as a focal point for Native news and information. We maintain a documentary library for networking with the native and international press. Yadkidichi Native Center's Speakers Bureau provides spokespersons for school programs, conference speakers, and community presentations. Yadkidichi Native Center is experienced in planning, promoting Native forums, symposiums, powwows, and cultural events. Yadkidichi's Mishkwinataki Environment Program protects Mother Earth through conservation and restoration projects. Yadkidichi's Environmental Education Program focuses on curriculum development, teacher training, and nature field trips. We are members of the professional organization, the North American Association of Environmental Education. Yadkidichi's Kinonuatakusin Native Arts creates quality handcrafted traditional and contemporary fine arts. Please request our catalog of custom flutes, pottery, beaded necklaces, bracelets, earrings, leather pouches, hat bands, and chokers with bone. Yadkidichi Native Center's Wolf Mountain Radio Program, Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, honors Native American and Indigenous peoples throughout the world by being a voice for our ancestors, contemporary, and future generations. Please write us for our catalog of audio tapes available for purchase. Native peoples throughout the world are concerned for the well-being of Sacred Mother Earth, tribal sovereignty, and respect for cultural lifeways. If you appreciate hearing Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices, we ask you, our listeners, to help financially support our program to stay on the air. Wolf Mountain Radio is an all-volunteer production. Any financial contribution to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices will be greatly appreciated. We thank you for listening to Honoring Mother Earth Indigenous Voices. We welcome your comments and suggestions. Please feel free to contact us about our consulting services, or if you or your organization is interested in hosting a speaker or educational forum. To contact Yadkidichi Native Center, write to Yadkidichi Native Center, 1731 16th Avenue Northeast, Naples, Florida, 34120, USA. Yadkidichi Native Center sincerely thanks you. Aho, Kinawatakusin, to all of our relations.
music from Native American singer-songwriter Peggy Vermette off Turtle Island Music CD, Contemporary Native American Music. The name of the song was Lies. Prior to our Yaakitishi Native Center program identification, we featured traditional Indian music from the band Runap Pacha. The name of the song was Tumantio, from the land now called Ecuador. Well, dear friends, we're nearing the end of our time together for this edition of Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. I wish to again thank today's program guest, Dr. Fahud Jaber, for sharing his thoughts with us on Wolf Mountain Radio. Please listen next week for Program 3 of my conversation with Dr. Jaber on the cultural history of Lebanon in the Middle East. Listeners who are interested to learn more about Yaakitishi Native Center may visit our website, www.yaakitishi.org. Once again, listeners who are interested to learn more about Yaakitishi Native Center, visit our website, www.yaakitishi.org. We also welcome your email comments and suggestions. Our email is yaakitishi@earthlink.net. Our email is yaakitishi@earthlink.net. We shall conclude today's broadcast with music from Tistista Cheyenne flutist Joseph Firecrow off his Mekoshe Music CD, Legend of the Warrior. The name of the song is My Elders Speak. Thank you for listening to Wolf Mountain Radio's Honoring Mother Earth, Indigenous Voices. This is your host and producer, Ernest Pritzker. Aho, Kinon Wontakwisin, to all of our relations. Thank you. Kinowuntakusin. You are listening to the American Indian Movement's Honoring Song. This is Wolf Mountain Press, a documentary program focusing on Native lands and indigenous peoples throughout the world. Wolf Mountain Press will present the situations facing Indian peoples throughout the world with Native music, poetry, news, and Indian case histories in the struggle to protect Mother Earth and the sacred ways of life of Native peoples.